Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez.
Shame on them.
Mayor Dean Trantalis thinks that Governor DeSantis should shut down all Florida beaches. Miami-Dade County took that measure today. We spoke with Mayor Trantalis about protecting our elderly population and the economic impact of the virus. Also, the Florida legislature is voting today on this year's budget. A lot has changed because much of the state has shut down. Republican State Senator Manny Diaz Jr. says there's a chance lawmakers may have to return in the summer and redo parts of the budget if things are still on lockdown. And hundreds of thousands of people are now applying for unemployment benefits, many of them formerly employed in South Florida's massive service industry. We're joined by Democratic Representative Donna Shalala about the role the federal government is playing to support all of us in these troubling times. All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. Coronavirus continues to spread nationwide, and Florida has a significant number of new cases. The total number of cases here rose to 390 overnight, according to the Florida Department of Health. In South Florida, Broward now has 96 cases. Miami-Dade has 86. The federal government is poised to pass legislation today that may be critical in supporting families hit hardest by the virus. The Families First Coronavirus Response Act has passed both the House and Senate and now awaits the president's signature. We're joined now by Democratic Congresswoman Donna Shalala, who's back in South Florida. She's joining us via phone out of an abundance of caution. Congresswoman Shalala, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
And by the way, we want to hear from you. What stories do you want to share with us about how coronavirus is impacting your life? How has it hit you personally? Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. You can also call in 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. Congresswoman, before we get into the details of the act, the virus got very close to home. Representative Mario Diaz-Balart tested positive for the virus, becoming the first to do so. Ben McAdams from Utah also tested positive. Is there concern about the safety of the members of Congress? Have you had any direct contact with any of these gentlemen?
Well, I, of course, know both of them. They're both good friends. I haven't had any physical contact with either one of them. I don't think I saw Mario on the floor as we were voting, and I haven't been within 6 feet of Ben McAdams, but look, I have no more worry about members of Congress than I do about people in my own community. I think it's important that all of us stay healthy and do everything we can to do what we've been told to do, to wash our hands, to keep social distances, to keep at home to the extent that we can. And I'm worried about small businesses and about workers in our community. So I refuse to be more worried about myself than I am about everybody else.
All right, let's talk about the details of the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. Again, heading to the president's desk, a lot of layers to this. First, how is this eliminating the cost for patients to be tested?
It will make testing absolutely free. No co-pays, no costs for patients. And it doesn't make any difference whether they have insurance or they have lousy insurance like these junk plans, or whether they don't have insurance. In every single case, the tests will be free once their doctor makes the recommendation. And if they don't have a doctor, they can go to one of our community health centers. We have 21 in Miami-Dade federally qualified community health centers. They could go to one of those, and they will provide them with a prescription to get the test. They may be doing swabs directly. Some of the community health centers are actually doing the swabs and then sending them on to a test site.
And you talk about that, and that leads to the issue of this confusion sometimes as to, okay, how do I get tested? If I have symptoms, what's the process now to go through testing, especially here in South Florida?
Well, you should call your doctor immediately. And if you don't have a doctor or a doctor's office, you should call a community health center for them to go through their checklist to find out if you really do have symptoms. In some case, if you're healthy and you're young, the doctor may say, look, just quarantine yourself. Because for many people, in fact, for most people, this is going to be a mild disease. If you're elderly or you have underlying health conditions, they may tell you immediately to go and get tested. But it's really up to our physicians and our advanced practice nurses in our community to make those decisions about who ought to be tested. We may be broadening tests once we get the supplies, but at the moment, we've got to focus on those who have symptoms, particularly on the elderly and those who have underlying health conditions.
And you talk about self-quarantining, and this is another part of the act is, you know, you have people choosing not to work, obviously, out of fear of spreading the virus or getting it themselves. Explain the emergency paid leave aspect of this bill.
Well, the bill actually allows for payment for paid leave, and your employer will be reimbursed if they have under 500 employees. So we've added those kinds of benefits. But for those that have been either let go or furloughed, and I think this is very important, we have added to the unemployment insurance in every state. Unfortunately, Florida has one of the lowest reimbursements in the country. I think it's about $275 a week. And all of us are trying to convince the governor and the state legislature needs to raise that number because the feds, frankly, I don't want my tax money going to Michigan when my friends and neighbors could use it if they leave their jobs. So or they're forced out of their jobs. And this is also true of people that work for small businesses. We have to get the help, the cash help to both small businesses, but particularly to workers and their families. But people can apply online. Thousands of people already are in Florida. They can apply online for unemployment benefits.
And, you know, because of the situation we're in, the circumstances we're living under, how long does that paid leave, part of that act, last?
Well, you know, it'll last for a very long time. Don't worry about the existing legislation the president's about to sign. That's only the second bill we passed. The first bill we passed was to increase the amount of money to find a vaccine and for the healthcare system. This second one is focused on workers and their families. It's called Families First. The next one will be an economic stimulus, but we'll go back and increase either the leave time or the unemployment compensation and fine-tune it. Whatever we need to do, we're going to do, and we're going to do it quickly. You will never see politicians move so fast as they will during this crisis and in a bipartisan way. I can't thank my colleagues enough. Everybody's pulling together in this crisis.
We're talking about the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, again, already passing the House and Senate, going to the president's desk for signature. We're talking with Democratic Congresswoman Donna Shalala. And again, we want to hear from you. How has this, how has this virus impacted your life? Whether it's you're not working anymore right now or you're home with your kids, what have been some of the challenges? Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Call in. We'd like to hear from you. 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. Congresswoman, thousands of Americans now filing for unemployment benefits. That number up by more than 30% from a week ago. Many of those folks work in the service industry here in South Florida. Does this legislation address the surge of unemployment benefits?
It does. And it also gives the state money for the administrative structures. We didn't simply put in the money for the workers, but we gave the state money so that they could handle this surge of unemployment. And in our community, we'll be one of the hardest hit. It's the subcontractors at the airlines. It's everybody that works in the hotels. It's the entire cruise industry, though I'm not talking about the cruise companies themselves. I'm talking about their workers, and that amounts to about 146,000 people. So in South Florida, we're going to be heavily hit, and I'm particularly worried about the small businesses that are tied to the tourist industry. The restaurants, all of them are affected because we have, in fact, closed them except for a little bit of takeout.
And so you have the small businesses that are hurting. You have the workers, especially in the service industry. Now they're not working. I mean, malls are even closing. But you also have big industries asking for bailouts, airlines. I don't know yet if the cruise industry said anything about that, but they're also looking at possible a lot of losses. Disney World is shut down. How are you feeling about the bigger companies coming and saying, we're going to need some help?
Well, I do believe that we may have to give some of the industries help. But remember, the largest cruise companies are not American. They don't fly under American flags, but their workers are our workers. So we need to do everything we can to protect their workers. In terms of the airline industry, I expect there will be some bipartisan support. My view is it has to be conditional. I've been fighting for their contractors, the people that take care of the luggage, that clean the planes. I want to make sure that we work with and think about them in the process of helping the airlines, because that's the contingency we have to look at. We ought to condition any kind of aid on protecting all of the people that are actually the subcontractors. And I think that's important that community leaders recognize that. And there be some limitations on CEO salaries and things like that if we're going to give them some loans to help them through this crisis. But there's no question that we're going to have to do some of these things. But I think workers first. Let's think about the people, our friends and neighbors in our community, that are losing their jobs.
And what about healthcare in this situation? I mean, there's always been debate, especially with Florida lawmakers, about expansion of Medicaid. But in a situation like this, how does this act, or what else does Congress have to do to make sure that at least the basic services are provided? Is it about expanding Medicaid?
Yes, it is about expanding Medicaid, and we have put additional money in so that people can get on Medicaid. But this state has done us a disservice by not expanding Medicaid. There are at least 100,000, maybe 180,000 people that would be affected if we expanded Medicaid. And the federal government will pay for it, and lawmakers have done us a disservice by not expanding Medicaid. Because these are low-income workers. They're people that get up every day and go to work, but they don't have health insurance in their companies. But we have put in additional money to encourage the states to cover more people, particularly low-income workers, on their Medicaid program. But this is healthcare first. The fact is, it's our investments in healthcare to make sure, number one, that people get the test, and we will work to make sure that anyone who is sick gets coverage, that their treatment is covered as well. And that's what we're all working for. So that you can see that our focus is really on the people in our community, making sure that they can get tested, they can get treatment, that they don't go bankrupt because of this. Yeah. And more importantly, that you can get some income.
And as you said, the part of the act, too, is that the testing will be free, insurance or no insurance. Again, talking with Democratic Congresswoman Donna Shalala. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. I wanted to go to the phones to Seth, who is a mobile healthcare provider. Seth, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
Excellent. So the company's name is Dr. House Calls, and we are a mobile physician group that sees patients in assisted living, independent living, as well as private homes. And I want people to know that Medicare has expanded their telehealth. Before, Medicare would not pay for it. Now they are paying for it at the rate that they would pay a regular visit in a doctor's home.
Okay.
So now a person can get telemedicine in their home, or they can call us and we can have the doctor come right to their home physically. Because if we're going out, we're going to a doctor's office, they have the potential of either infecting themselves or others.
Right. Seth, thank you so much. Appreciate it. So now Medicare helping pay for that. Seth, I appreciate the call. Congresswoman, we've seen what's happening in Italy. and the number of new patients continues to exceed the capacity of emergency rooms. And that scenario could happen here in a matter of weeks as this virus spreads. How is the federal government addressing specifically the issue of capacity, and how might the military play a role in that?
Well, you know, we live in South Florida, and we have always had plans within our hospitals and urgent care centers for surge capacity. And every single hospital in our community has a plan to expand. But our strategy has to be to starve this virus by staying home, by washing our hands, by sanitizing any surfaces that we touch, and by going to the doctor or calling the doctor when it's necessary. So we have to start that way. What we don't want to do is to overwhelm our emergency rooms with people that don't need to be there, or our hospitals. So everything we can do to test people outside of those settings will be extremely important. Some of it is the use of mobile clinics, and some of it will be the use of modern technology. Jackson and some of the other hospitals are in the process of buying German machines in which they'll be able to run a huge number of tests very quickly.
So, you know, what I hear from you then is part of it is just trying to keep people out of the hospitals. But is there a plan, if we have to expand those hospitals, if we need more beds, more ventilators, more of everything?
Yes, the answer is yes. And everybody's in the process of buying as many ventilators as they possibly can. There are surge plans. Now, those could be overwhelmed as well. And one of the things I was telling everybody last month is anyone that hasn't gotten a flu shot should absolutely get one, because here's the problem. We don't need to fill our emergency rooms in our hospitals with people that have the flu, because we have a prevention mechanism there where we don't have it for this coronavirus. We have no treatment yet, though we're working hard on treatment, and we will not have a vaccine for a couple of years. But we do have a vaccine for flu, and our hospitals are getting filled up in our emergency rooms with people that have the flu. That is totally unnecessary. If all of us did what the healthcare system told us to do, and right. that is to get a flu shot.
Let me, I want to go back over to the phones real quickly and get Robert in from Fort Lauderdale. Robert, you're an Uber driver.
Yeah, I drive full time for the flexibility. I have a young son that I share custody with, and it allows me to do that. The thing is like, I understand taking proper precautions and measures and, you know, to help mitigate the numbers, and I get all that, but what keeps me up at night at this point is not me getting this virus. It's not my son getting this virus. It's not even my 89-year-old father or 75-year-old mother, which is a concern, of course. But what's keeping me up now with this shutdown and affecting the tourism industry, I am making an eighth of what I used to make, an eighth. And being listed as an independent contractor, I don't qualify for unemployment insurance. That stuff is not going to put food on my table. It's not going to put money back in my pocket. And I just feel like we're starting to react in a way that maybe we are causing some more harm than needs to be caused. And I don't mean to put it that way, but, you know, I need to be able to provide food for my family. And I just feel like that's not being addressed as much as the other stuff.
Yeah.
Congresswoman, actually, we did address it in the bill. We did address independent contractors in the bill that the president has signed or is about to sign under unemployment insurance. So shortly, as soon as he signs that bill, information will go out for independent contractors. We're very much aware that it's not just small businesses, but it's independent contractors. So our unemployment insurance did address that issue.
And Robert, thank you so much for the call, and hang in there. Again, talking with Democratic Congresswoman Donna Shalala. And just to mention again, the Families First Coronavirus Response Act passing the House and Senate, now heading to the president's desk. We'll put up more information about what that act has, how it's going to be helping people. You could read more coverage, by the way, of COVID-19 at WLRN.org/coronavirus. Congresswoman Shalala, thank you so much for the time. I really do appreciate it.
You're welcome. And thank you for getting the information out to people in our community.
Absolutely. And stay safe, please.
Yes, you bet.
All right. Well, still to come, Florida lawmakers continued to meet this week to wrap the legislative session. Were they breaking with the guidance of the CDC and the White House? That's coming up next. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, the 2020 legislative session in Tallahassee coming to a close today. Lawmakers extended the session from last week as they hadn't successfully finalized the budget. Now, many have scrutinized the legislature for continuing to hold session at all after CDC guidelines suggested no gatherings of more than 50 people amidst this global pandemic. Republican State Senator Manny Diaz Jr. is the chair of the Senate Education Committee, and we spoke with him earlier today before the vote. When did the legislature start to take the issue of COVID-19 seriously? Because the CDC had warned last week about gatherings of less than 50 people. You have 160 members, but last week, all of you were on the floor together.
We did take precautions. So when the CDC came out with the recommendations, now we did take into account that we had to complete the people's work. You know, people were showing up to Publix, bag boys were showing up to Publix, people were showing up to restaurants to do their job. And we took precautions. We had doctors available. We had some screenings. We even had one incident where the House floor was temporarily paused and wiped down because of some members that had gone and attended some conferences. They were outside the window already of the danger of the quarantine, but they took the precautions anyway. So we were already taking precautions. However, we felt it imperative to complete the work of the people, because without a budget, the governor would not have the resources to be able to address the crisis.
And of course, I mean, the session was supposed to end last week. But as of this taping, you're about to go in and vote for the budget for this year. Some people went home and then came back. I mean, was there ever concern about that risk?
There is, and I did not go home, but others did. And so what we're doing today is the House is following a certain protocol where every member is going to be scanned and they're going to have a check before they go in. On the Senate side, we're actually doing it a little bit more like Congress does, where each member will come in to indicate a quorum, go back into a separate room. And then the president will recognize the chairman of the Appropriations Committee to present the budget. Questions will be submitted in writing, and he can answer them all. And then debate will be actually written into the record. And then they'll open up the board for a vote, and each member of the Senate will come in individually and vote. That way we will stay away from having to have multiple people in the room. And we will comply with the rules, because everybody will be maintained in an area behind the chamber separately where we won't violate. Now, it's easier in the Senate because we only have 40 members, and I believe we'll only have like 32 coming back. In the House, a little bit more difficult. So I think they're taking a different procedure where they're going to have every member screened and checked out before they go in, both with questions and I believe a thermometer, and making sure that none of the symptoms are there. I think that everyone here believes that we have a job to do, and we have to provide the governor and the state government the ability to expend these funds to deal with this crisis.
All right, well, let's talk about this budget. And look, this, because of COVID-19, things change day to day. So what you guys started with a couple of months ago looks completely different, because now you're talking about a state that's almost on shutdown. This is a big part of the year for the economies of South Florida because of a lot of tourists, the spring breakers, and so forth. That changed your budget a bit, didn't it? What's different now?
Absolutely. And we actually, the reason we're late, we should have been done last week, is because we took a pause and took into consideration what was going on. And so we actually moved about $300 million to a fund for the governor to have access immediately to deal with the coronavirus situation. We also have been fortunate over the years to build up a healthy reserve, including the Lawton Childs Fund that can be accessed for health emergencies. And that's about almost $1 billion. Our reserves are healthy. They're over $2 billion. And so all of that combined with the adjustment we made, we feel gives the governor the ability for the next 2 months to deal with this. Now, that does not mean that, because what you mentioned will cause projections to change. Remember, our budget is based on projections made by a committee that meets quarterly.
Right.
That committee is now meeting monthly, and we may have to come back in June and make an adjustment based on, you know, the realities of the revenues that have come in. But we do feel comfortable that we are providing enough of a cushion for the governor to be able to deal with what he needs to deal with over the next month and a half.
Well, what's your concern, Senator? I mean, you talk about having that $2 billion in the reserves, but, I mean, you can go through that very quickly. And you talk about projections. I mean, we're talking about bars and nightclubs shutting down. Beaches are shut down. And we don't know how long that has to go on for.
Yeah, and really, when you look at general revenue, we average about $2 billion a month in sales tax. That's obviously going to be cut during this period because bars are shut down. People are not traveling. You know, Disney World is closed. That's an indicator of an issue that we're going to have. Based on those projections, I think that when we have the projections from this month and next month, we'll be able to make a decision on the budget going forward based on actual numbers that will help us. And we will be conservative in nature when we make those decisions. Because remember, the budget that we are passing now is a budget beginning July 1. So nobody has actually received any of these funds. So we will hopefully make those decisions before funds go out. And so we won't really be cutting anyone. We will just be making different budget decisions now. When you come to this kind of situation, you have to make those decisions. And my biggest concern is local small businesses, because they don't have the cash balances to be able to stay open and certainly not able to keep those employees. Trying to get this curve flattened and get us back to a place where our businesses can function and get those revenues going, that's even more important than the state revenues, because I do think that the reserves could get us to the summer.
I'm speaking with Republican State Senator Manny Diaz Jr. He's talking to us about the legislature and how it's handled COVID-19 and also the bills that have passed this legislative session and what's going to happen with the budget. He's also, by the way, the Senate Education Committee chair. As you know, all good things must come to an end. We've had years of economic growth and expansion. I mean, the state unemployment just kept dropping and dropping. It's been really good. But what's your concern about the future for this year, especially when, again, we don't know how long this will last?
The concern is the unknown of how long it will last and the actual effect that it will have. Again, I go back to, you know, Disney, whenever they open again, they have the resources to come right back. Universal has the resources. I'm talking about the mom and pop businesses where it's a family business, where they have a couple of employees and they do not have the cash balances to sustain. You know, they may be able to sustain for a week or two, but many of these businesses don't have the cash balance to sustain a month. And then what happens when those businesses disappear? That is a major problem. And I think that's why we have to stay ahead of the curve and making sure that we are trying to flatten the spread of the virus and get us back to a place where people can function normally again. Because again, the lifeblood of this state is the state sales tax.
Yeah, right now we don't have enough supplies for testing. This is a challenge nationwide. But I mean, what's going on that front and being able to get our medical experts the tools they need to be able to do more tests?
Well, the governor did a great job in getting out in front of that and asking the federal government immediately for tests. So we received about 1,700 or 1,800 kits. We asked for a lot more. But to clear some confusion, each kit provides multiple tests. So right now, last night, they confirmed to me that they do have the ability to test over 600,000 people with the tests we currently have. We are still on the list for asking for more, as well as medical supplies to make sure that our healthcare providers remain safe during the time that they're treating patients. But I think there's a lot of confusion out there on the number of tests. There's a difference between test kits and actual tests that can be done by each kit. And then really it's an issue of deployment. Obviously, Broward is the epicenter of this crisis, and Miami-Dade is close behind. And naturally, the metropolitan areas are always going to have more because of the density, because of the travel. So again, I think that it's a matter of the governor has shown some great leadership on this and not panicking and making sure that resources are deployed. The most important thing is if you have symptoms or you feel like you've been in contact, self-quarantine provides you with the ability to make sure you don't spread this. And I think that's why those protocols, aside from the washing of the hands, don't touch your face, keep your circle of people tight within, you know, and don't have gatherings of more than 10 people. I mean, that is the most important thing. The safest thing to do is to go ahead and self-quarantine to make sure that others aren't affected.
Sticking with coronavirus, but I want to move over to education. You are on the education committee. You're the education committee chair. I wanted to know what you're hearing from educators. As schools are closed now, but students are learning from home, how long can we sustain that?
It's amazing that we have this opportunity, even though it obviously not the kind of situation we wanted to do it in. But we have been leaders nationwide in virtual education. And surprisingly enough, all of our districts have stepped up along with the State Department of Education in being able to put these platforms in place. And our students are able to access their classrooms virtually. And I think you could actually, not that I'm saying this is going to happen, you could actually probably complete the year to those platforms. There's always hiccups here or there. Again, we're a state of 22 million people. But we are actually very prepared for that. And I think that the fact that we have now canceled the test, there's no school grades, and all students have to do is complete their courses and their GPA, I think we're in a good place.
About those students who you have a portion of the population of students, they don't have computers or they don't have good internet access. Does the state have enough? Has there been enough money set aside to make sure those families have that access?
So what we have done is the governor has removed the restrictions on certain funds that the schools already receive that they would normally be spending on other things that a lot of time doesn't necessarily get spent. And they've freed that up for them to be able to use it to provide the devices, to work with their local providers to provide internet access. And again, that's a difficult task because you are right. There are places in the state where clearly there are students that don't have access to either devices or connectivity, and they are working on that. The best thing that the state can do with that is provide support, because that is completely something that has to be done locally, because really the local leaders are going to know where those spots are that we have to provide. But I think that you have to give the kudos to both the governor, the commissioner, and the superintendents. And in Miami-Dade, from every report that I've gotten, they haven't missed a beat.
Talking about education, because that was a big issue going into this legislative session. The governor wanted more money for teachers and for education. Again, because of what we're going through, does that have an impact on what the spending for education going forward?
Well, it could have an impact depending on how long this lasts. Obviously, we had a monumental historic spend on $500 million for teacher salaries above and beyond the increase of $40 for students in the regular funding. You know,
and is that hard to tell? Because the governor wanted the $47,500 for starting teacher salaries. Is that impacted? Was that impacted by it?
It has not yet. So that is in this budget, $400 million for the beginning salaries and $100 million for districts to distribute to veteran teachers. That was kind of a compromise we reached. We won't know the impact on that. I think that there's several things in the budget that would be that would have to be readjusted before you get to that, because there's other places where monies can come from. But I think if you get into an extended crisis that goes into the summer, then you have to start, you know, you really have to protect basic fundings because our schools have to function. So any spending above and beyond that includes the teacher salaries could become in peril at that point. I would not say that we are there now. I would say that we have to be very vigilant as we go into June of what the actual revenues are in March, April, and May.
Briefly, obviously, the coronavirus is going to take the headlines, but, I mean, this is the end of the session. Tell me one bill that passed that you were happy to see make it and one that you're disappointed that didn't get the opportunity.
Well, there was two bills. Obviously, the teacher salary bill and the implementation of that policy that goes along with the money was, I think, historic in Florida. And the expansion of the scholarships that we created last year, where we had 35,000 low-income students waiting on a wait list, and we expanded it by 28, doesn't quite get to the number, but we did provide access next year for more of those students. Disappointing is actually the fact that we did not get to pass the presidential search bill for universities that I think would give our universities a leg up when they're doing a national search and having a bigger pool, a better pool of candidates. But again, that's what happens sometimes when you get to the end of session. You know, there's crunch, and that's the way it's designed.
Senator Diaz, thank you so much. I really do appreciate the time, and stay safe.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I'll talk to you soon.
That was Republican State Senator Manny Diaz Jr. By the way, WLRN's Jessica Bakeman produced a story about the legislative session and how coronavirus has impacted the way they do business. Go to WLRN.org to read the story. Well, still to come, what are local leaders doing to stop mass congregations in South Florida, like spring break partying? It's coming up next. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, March is traditionally the time for spring break shenanigans here in South Florida, and it sounds a little something like this. Well, that video wasn't taken from last year or even several weeks ago. That was taken by the Miami Herald's Martin Vassolo on Miami Beach just last week. Well, despite Miami Beach Mayor Dan Gelber and Fort Lauderdale Mayor Dean Trantalis calling off spring break to prevent the spread of COVID-19, still, thousands of people continue to party on the beaches. This morning, Miami-Dade County Mayor Carlos Jimenez closed all the beaches in the county. Will Broward do the same? Should Governor DeSantis shut down the beaches across the state? Earlier this morning, we spoke with Mayor Trantalis about spring break and about the citywide response to the pandemic. As of this recording, Mayor, Broward County still remains the county with the highest number of confirmed cases. But when did you and the city and county leaders start talking about the potential threat of COVID-19?
Thank you for having me on your show today. I appreciate it. I think you can, if we look back, we were talking about COVID-19 for at least a couple of weeks. And we were watching the news, we were watching the reports, and they were sketchy at best because we were getting inconsistent messages at all levels of government. And so it was difficult for us to respond and to find a basis upon which we would need to take action. As the virus continued to spread and as developments occurred, especially locally, I met with our city staff to make some determination as to how we needed to proceed. It was over this past weekend that I connected with the mayor of Miami Beach, and we met and made the decision collectively to close our beaches down to spring break as a starting point for trying to eradicate the spread of the disease.
And what was that conversation like? I mean, you know, because again, you just had spring break had just started. And you have thousands of young people down here. It's a tradition, and that's a big economic kick. But what was that conversation like in making that decision?
Well, it was no easy decision, but it was the obvious decision. And the conversations began within our city staff as we addressed different options. When we finally had the conversation between the mayors, I don't think it took much convincing to make the final decision that we needed to make in order to move forward on this. We knew that if we didn't both close down, it would have been futile for just one beach to close and not the other. I did contact some of our coastal mayors in Broward County to alert them as to what we wanted to do, and with the expectation and the hope that they would collaborate in doing the same so that we had consistency throughout South Florida. So the conversation itself was more in terms of not whether we should close the beaches down, but how to close them and for how long.
And what do you think about when you see videos of, again, a lot of these young people in Clearwater and still parts of South Florida still having spring break?
Well, shame on them. Shame on those cities that refuse to recognize the reality that we're now facing. And at this point, I would implore the governor to take additional actions that I believe are within his power. You know, we've been working really well with the governor's office and trying to implement local decisions. And the governor's office has been great in providing necessary services that we are going to need in order to, you know, fulfill the expectations that the community has of us in terms of medical supplies and testing and things like that.
But when you say, ask the governor to take extra action, what does that look like? Are you talking about having...
I think the governor should close all the beaches in Florida. I think that, you know, you can't just expect one beach to close and then the crowd to just go away. They're going to find, you know, Florida is a beautiful place to be, especially in the wintertime. People come here for our weather, for the community we have, and friendliness and food options. And, you know, it's a great place to visit, and there's never been a reason to want to leave Fort Lauderdale. And, you know, we have we're a great attraction for people all over the world.
But the governor, I believe, should take
that final action and say, look, we need to close all of our beaches at least for 30 days. Keep the exposure to a minimum. And I think that message needs to be carried with our bars and our restaurants and any places where there is a significant gathering of individuals in close proximity.
This leads to this idea that, you know, as a civic leader, you have this duty to protect the health of the residents. But at the same time, you know, the economy is part of our health. It's part of our well-being.
This is
one of the biggest times of the year for us. How do you find that balance?
It's going to be a difficult time for everybody. There's no doubt about that, especially wage earners who often live from paycheck to paycheck. And listening to the folks in Washington, the message is that they're going to have relief. Relief is going to happen any day where people can apply for unemployment compensation to help at least provide minimum sustenance until we get through this.
I wanted to switch over to something else real quickly. This has been in the headlines the last couple of days. There was the one patient at the Atria Willowwood facility. This is an assisted living facility in Broward County. One patient did die, had COVID-19. Then we hear from the state yesterday, at least 19 suspected or confirmed cases at long-term facilities in the state. We just don't know which ones. But what do you know? What have you heard, and what can you tell us?
We know that there are other suspected cases at that same facility. The problem is taking up to 96 hours, that's 4 days, to receive test results. You know, we need to do better. We cannot afford to wait that long to hear test results. I'm hoping they all come back negative, but I do know that there are additional patients that have been taken to the hospital in the last couple of days with fever and hard breathing that are suspected COVID-19 patients. But we don't know for sure because the resources of the state are being overwhelmed by the influx of new possible cases. So we need to do what we can. You know, the governor's office has been providing a significant amount of resources to our county. That death occurred in Fort Lauderdale, and we have death at our doorstep, and we cannot shy away from our responsibility to act quickly. And so we implore our governor and his staff to work as quickly as they can to add more people to the phone lines, people looking to get testing, and people looking to get their results quickly so that we can minimize the spread of this disease.
And you have the state's responsibility. What can a community do? What can you do to make sure? Because we're talking about, again, the population most at risk for this disease are the elderly.
Yes, and we have a large elderly population here, especially in season. Many people have come down here for the season. But I have to tell you, I'm very proud of the people in our community. There's a lot of people here are taking it upon themselves to do the right thing. We're seeing people self-quarantine. We're seeing people minimizing their outside involvement. They're taking themselves out of the public. We've closed the movie theaters, and I understand the malls are looking to close now. We got to hunker down here for a few weeks and do our best. But I tell you, the people in Fort Lauderdale and in Broward County, the people are really willing to work together to make this work. So that's what people can do. Maintain good, healthy hygiene. When you go into a facility, make sure you use hand sanitizer when you enter and when you leave. And do your best to just try to be cooperative with the authorities as we're trying to maintain stability and cooperation with everybody.
We're talking with Fort Lauderdale Mayor Dean Trantalis about the city's response to COVID-19. Right now, if you're looking for any information on this coronavirus, go to WLRN.org/coronavirus. I wanted to ask you about city workers. Are all of them now working from home, or at least most of them?
Most of them are. We're still trying to maintain city services. We're doing it remotely thanks to the genius of 21st century technology. We're able to, still be able to operate. I know my city commission office is working on a skeleton crew, but most of them are at home working. So we're doing our best to cope. We know that it's temporary. This is not forever. And we know that going forward, we will learn lessons about, how we can better respond to diseases like this. Who knows? This may not be the last of the diseases that may come our way during our lifetime. So, but at the same time, I'll have to tell you, I think we're learning a lot of lessons about ourselves. Sitting home, making dinner, spending time with family and not always rushing around and feeling we have to be somewhere and do something. It's almost comforting to say, let's take a breather in our lives and let's just, enjoy each other. And I think that this moment in time is going to change habits permanently and hopefully for the good.
Now, when you talk about city workers, because this could go for months, do you foresee them being able to be paid?
City workers will be paid. We will continue to maintain our staffing levels during this crisis. It's absolutely necessary, especially as we're trying to respond to the needs and the expectations of our community. But the thing is that you say it's going to go on for months. I don't know that. It could be 1 month. It could be 2 months.
I'm only bringing that up because, that's what we're hearing from the medical experts. And the White House has even said that.
Well, I'm not exactly sure I'm going to place my bets on things coming from the White House right now. They've not had the best track record in keeping us informed as to the progress of this disease. So I know there are certain medical experts that associate themselves with the White House, but I just want to make sure we're getting a clear and consistent message before we in government take any further action.
So you're hearing from locals. You're hearing especially from businesses. And what are you telling them? What are you hearing from them?
You know what they're telling us? They're telling us, thank you for doing this. They're saying, thank you for taking charge and for, taking on this problem head on. People are thanking us for recognizing the real threat that this has. Now, that's the feeling now. Will that same feeling exist in 3 weeks or in 4 weeks? Will people tire of being isolated like they have been? There's no doubt that human nature is going to eventually, change feelings. But I have to tell you that right now, if we can show progress in maintaining distances and keeping the rate of contagion low, I think people will thank those in government for the actions that we did take. How long we need to keep this in place is going to be assessed on a week-by-week basis.
Mayor, in any situation, you hope for the best, but you plan for the worst. Does the city have a plan if this does go into the summer or beyond?
We're working on that now because this is uncharted territory. When I was elected mayor, no one gave me a guidebook as to how to deal with with viruses. So everybody, and there's not one mayor in this state that I think can say, you know, we all know what the best thing is to do. So we're doing our best, we're trying our best, and we're working with one another. We're on conference calls with one another, trying to establish best practices. Whether this goes into the next season, I don't know. We're hoping that we can truncate the spread as soon as possible.
Mayor Trentalis, I really appreciate the time. Thank you, and stay safe.
Thank you.
That was Fort Lauderdale Mayor Dean Trentalis. And by the way, we want to hear from you. What do you think of what he said? Do you think we should shut down all the beaches? Have you continued to see spring breakers on the beaches? What should the state do? Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Email us, sundial@wlrnnews.org. And that's the program for this Thursday, March 19th. Coming up next week on the program, how is South Florida training health professionals to deal with a global pandemic? You know, the University of Miami School of Nursing and Health Studies hosts a full-scale disaster simulation every year, but the lead of the program is taking the course online to discuss disaster and emergency response in the time of coronavirus. Also, Sundial wants to hear about how kids are dealing with the social effects of COVID-19. How are your kids coping? What's it like for them to be out of school? What activities are you doing with them at home? We want to hear from you and your kids. Send us a recording to sundial@wlrnnews.org. And don't forget about our book club. Find us on Facebook, Sundial Book Club. Just a little something to get your mind off all of this. We're reading Ordinary Girls by Jaquita Diaz. Great, great read. I'm Luis Hernandez. Have a great weekend. Have a great Friday and Saturday and Sunday. Stay safe. We'll talk to you again on Monday.